The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, it's that time where we bring you some recommendations for what to watch on the big screen and the small screen. I'm joined today by journalist Niamh O'Reilly. Niamh, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And Screen Time presenter John Fardy. And Happy New Year to you as well, John.
Happy New Year to you. You're full of life,
I am.
It's full of life.
Yes, it's a new year.
Yes.
So let's, Niamh, start with you.
Sure.
And I'm completely out of the loop where it comes to Squid
Adrian,
Game. I'm
no.
completely out of the loop. All my family are in the loop.
Okay.
I'm out of the loop.
I think it's time you joined the circle.
I think
of
so.
Squid Game.
Squid Game 2. So you're going to have to help me here.
No problemo. Okay. So this is the second series of what can only be described as the phenomenon from 2021. I mean, this became one of the biggest watched shows on Netflix out of nowhere. It's a Korean show. So in the first series, it basically followed this group of people who were kind of hard on their luck, people who had got into terrible debt, and they were recruited to play in this game called Squid Game, which on the surface seemed like a normal kind of game where people were playing versions of childhood games that they would play in Korea, but they took a deadly turn. And if you lost the game, you were eliminated by being shot. So very deadly, very bloodthirsty. So this series takes place about 3 years after series one, and the winner of the last series game, Ji-hun, is back and he wants revenge. So series two is very much about his journey going back into Squid Game to find the people behind it and to bring them kind of to justice.
Why did the first one work as well as it did?
Oh, God, I think it was one of these things, like, it's sort of lightning in a bottle. And that's kind of the issue, I think, with series two. It's very difficult to recreate that because nobody really knew what to expect. And I mean, playing these sorts of games, there's one called Red Light, Green Light, sort of like, what time is it, Mr. Wolf? So, you know, when you turn around and if you're caught, you're out. Children's games, but with a really deadly twist. I mean, people were shot in a very, very bloodthirsty way. But also what made it great was there was an emotional arc to these characters, and you really got to know them and you got to know their backstory. And there was one episode in the first series called Marbles, which is probably still one of the best pieces of television I've ever seen. The emotional arc in that was incredible. But this series, I think it's a little bit harder to follow that because we know what to expect. Like, how do you reinvent something like Squid Game? So they've put in some different games this time, but with the same sort of twist. I mean, they're children's games, but if you lose, you get shot. And there is still an emotional arc there, and especially Ji-hun. I mean, to go back willingly into this game knowing, you know, what is going to happen to you takes a lot. So, you know, he's doing this for a reason and he wants to save the other contestants and he wants to tell them, you know, you're in danger here. I think the problem with this second series is that it's not a complete story. There is another season to go, season three, which will hopefully hit in autumn of this year. But where the first series was a fully rounded story and you had a complete arc, this isn't. So it didn't work for me in quite the same way. But I think there's a lot of emotion in it. There's a lot of fantastic twists, which I'm not going to go into. But I would say it's really worth your time if you watch the first series. And if you haven't watched the first series, now is the time to binge.
I'm definitely going to.
You've got to get into it though, Adrian, because it's TV that it will take you 5 minutes to get into it because it's whack in the face. As soon as you sit down, you're in. And I found with season two, it's not as satisfying as season one, but I don't think it ever could be. But it's still a cut above most things that are on TV.
Yeah.
And it's great that millions of people are watching something in a foreign language and no one is complaining, but I have to read the subtitles, because it grabs you from the word go. I think it's brilliant TV.
Yeah,
honestly, put it on for 10 minutes. And I don't think you'll stop watching.
Yeah.
Okay, in an hour's time, I'll be sitting down in front of my telly and I'll start with Squid Game, the first season.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be as successful as the first one?
I don't think it's going to be quite as successful. I think, as I said, the first series was lightning in a bottle. I don't think it's going to do the same numbers. It's still a compelling show. And there is some emotional narrative threads in it that are really hard hitting. And it does leave you on an awful cliffhanger from an emotional point of view. So we have a long wait. And I think that might sit not right with some people. It's a long time to wait for the conclusion of that. But I think if they can tie up those threads that they've left hanging in the second series, I think people will be quite satisfied. satisfied, but it doesn't feel like a complete story. So I think that's where the dissatisfaction is maybe coming from.
Okay, let's move to the big screen now. And John, we're going to talk in a moment about a movie called Better Man. Let's have a quick listen.
I know what you're thinking. What's with the monkey? I'm Robbie Williams. I'm one of the biggest pop stars in the world. But I've always seen myself a little less evolved.
You've got to risk it all, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
So that's a clip from Better Man, which released on St. Stephen's Day. Tell me about it, John.
Yeah, it's a strange day to release. They do that a lot in the States, but it's something that's growing here, I guess, as hopefully more people go to the cinema. So this is a Robbie Williams biopic, okay? Robbie Williams' voice is in it as a narrator, but what's really interesting in this is the Robbie Williams character is a monkey. He's a chimp. Right? And you might think, what? But he was talking to the director in a pre kind of let's make this meeting, Michael Gracie, who gave us The Greatest Showman. And he said, you know, my life, I've always seen myself as kind of like a dancing monkey kind of thing. And that sounds like the worst idea imaginable. But this works so brilliantly well. When you take most modern rock biopics or biopics, there tends to be a template. It's person is born, has prestigious talent at acting or playing the piano or whatever, you know, singing, then has tragedy, then becomes famous, then gives way to drink and drugs, then finds redemption. Yeah, hey, it's Ray Charles, it's Elton John, you know, whatever. So they've really mixed it up here. And this, you know, not to say, use the same phrase again about Squid Game, whacks you in the face. You're so drawn in by this story. And it sounds like such a strange idea to have a chimpanzee who's CGI'd up playing Robin Williams, but Robbie Williams, but it works brilliantly. And you know, Robbie Williams has been very open about this lack he's always felt and how he's never felt good enough, despite, you know, 250,000 people at Nedworth going, Robbie, excuse me. And this just captures that so brilliantly. I was blown away by how good this was and how unexcited I was by the prospect, because I just thought this was pointless, you know?
And it's many biopics as well in the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. But this one works so well. And even the guy who plays his father, people will know him from League of Gentlemen, Steve Pemberton, who was this guy who just kind of wanted to be a performer himself but never had it, and left him with this kind of sense of you can do it, son, and watching these 70s and 80s shows where he thought he could make it, and then he does, and he's like standing on his balcony as a chimpanzee going, I'm going to be effing famous. Like, it works, and it really shouldn't. It's, you know, it's early doors, but it's the best movie of the year so far. It's only 2 days old, I understand.
Really?
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah.
And does it go into every graphic detail of his life?
It does, and
as told by a monkey,
without giving a spoiler, it takes it right up to where all the drama is, the take that and all that year and the start of the solo career. But it doesn't tie it up nicely and nor should it. In the same way that Rocket Man kind of did that a bit, it's the meat and potatoes, the stuff we want to see, the harsh emotional stuff he went through, and the level of fame. And just, you know, at one point, you forget, but in the, you know, early noughties, he was the most famous pop star on the planet. He really was. Like, he was the Elton John or the David Bowie of his day. And it captures it brilliantly. So it's not a beginning, middle and end, but it's all the better for that.
All right. It's called Better Man in cinemas right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Now back to the small screen. And I'm seeing a lot of adverts on television for Lockerbie. Yeah. Many people will remember the Lockerbie air disaster. Yeah. What is this setting out to achieve?
So this is based on, I suppose, the real life search for truth by Dr. Jim Swire and his wife, Jane Swire, who lost their daughter in the Lockerbie tragedy. It stars Colin Firth, and his wife is played by Catherine McCormick. If her name doesn't sound familiar, you'll know her face. She was Murren in Braveheart.
Oh, right,
and she was also in 28 Weeks Later. She's a really nice actress. The two of them have a really nice chemistry in this, I have to say. So yeah, this goes through the whole thing, and I think it's easy to kind of forget about Lockerbie. Like, this happened in my lifetime, but I was very young, and I don't think I ever really grasped how big of a tragedy this was. Particularly,
I mean, it was a 747 plummeting into a small little village.
Adrian, yeah. But like the human tragedy of this, everybody was killed on that plane. 259 passengers and then 11 people on the ground were killed as well in Lockerbie, in this small Scottish town. So I think it brings that to life really, really well. And people who maybe weren't alive when this happened or young like me when it happened, I think it will really, really open their eyes. I've watched the first couple of episodes of this. It drops this weekend on Sky Atlantic. And the first episode is, to borrow your face, borrow your
you can't borrow my face.
I can't borrow your face,
it's
John.
Given this to someone already.
Off. To borrow your phrase, it's a smack in the face. It goes through the absolute nightmare of what happened on that night. And the people of Lockerbie are going about their business. This was the 21st of December, 1988. People were ice skating, doing their Christmas shopping. And all of a sudden, debris starts, I don't even want to say falling from the sky. It is like bombs going off, fireballs. People didn't know what was happening. They thought the world was coming to an end. Bits of plane, bodies falling from the sky. And then the fuselage itself, when it hits, is an enormous fireball. So it's the first half an hour or so, I would even offer a trigger warning for it. Like it's gruesome, and it goes into some really, really shocking detail. Fields filled with bodies, and that sort of thing. So just be warned.
And many episodes?
I think there's 7 episodes in total. And the first two, I'd say, are the most gory, for want of a better word. And then after that, it kind of deals with the human side of it, and particularly through the eyes of Dr. Jim Swire and his wife. And he wants to find out, it's not even justice, he just wants to find out what happened and why this happened. And the real life story of this took an awful lot of twists and turns, really some crazy stuff. There was a lot of conspiracy theories even at the time about it. And it's about him trying to find out what happened to his daughter.
Right.
But so, the emotional side of it is just as good as that really opening episode where it's really a smack in the face. So it's well worth watching.
So Lockerbie, The Search for Truth. Search for Truth, and it's on Sky Atlantic. Now, John, back to the big screen again. We live in time. I actually got to see a preview of this a couple of weeks ago. Very powerful movie.
Oh, you've seen it. Mm. Wonderful. Delighted to hear it. You don't get this kind of stuff. Oh, that's brilliant. I'm delighted. Yeah, I'm glad you agree. So what we have is Andrew Garfield, Florence Pugh, and it's directed by John Crowley, great Irish director who gave us Intermission, directed some episodes of True Detective and things like that. You have this really interesting setup where Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh meet, where she runs him over in a car. And then it does a kind of, you know, Annie Hall kind of flipping around through their relationship at different times. There's also a cancer diagnosis in there and possibly returning cancer and children. And it's, you know, like a marriage story movie seen from different aspects of the Venn diagram of two lives together. I thought it was absolutely beautiful, I have to say. It's very sweet. It's also very sad.
I found it a little bit confusing at the start when it was jumping forward and backward over the years.
But you catch up, don't you?
Once I eventually copped what was happening, yes, it was brilliantly told.
I thought exactly the same thing. And then it becomes a full kind of meal as it goes on. You get it. But the performances, Andrew Garfield, but particularly Florence Pugh, I just thought were brilliant. So again, another great start to the year in terms of a movie. It was out New Year's Day, so it's only been out a day and a half now.
And I mean, the chemistry.
2 days, sorry,
the chemistry.
I left my
abacus second. The chemistry between the two of them is electric.
Absolutely, and the thing is, it's so hard to make that believable. And you hear these things now. I talk to people all the time. We talk about, you know, chemistry tests and nonsense like that. But whether they did one or not, I don't know. But as you say, they have it from the word go. You believe these two people's lives are intertwined.
Okay, so that is We Live in Time in cinemas since New Year's Day. And then finally, back to you, Niamh, and The Traitors on the BBC.
Yes. Have you watched this?
No.
Oh my God, Adrian. I recommend A Squid Game traitor's double bill. So yeah, this is on BBC One and this is the third series. Now, you might think that reality TV has gotten a bit haggard these days, but this shows when reality TV is good, it's really good. So it's hosted by Claudia Winkleman. It's 22 players in a gorgeous Scottish castle. She picks three traitors who are in secret and the rest are the faithful. So the traitor's job is to murder the faithful, so eliminate them, so send them home. And the faithful's job is to sniff out the traitors and to banish them. If there's any traitors left at the end of the show, they walk away with all of the money and the faithful don't. So that's the basic setup. There's a lot of backstabbing.
I did see one episode of it at the very start, but I didn't keep up with it.
Oh, I highly recommend you stick with it and do it now because the first episode was last night, so you can still catch up tonight if you want to dive into it. But it's great backstabbing, deception, all of the best stuff.
Brilliant. All right. The Traitors on BBC. Thank you very much indeed. We're unfortunately out of time. Niamh O'Reilly and John Fardy, thanks very much indeed.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.